Blog Talk Radio.
Well, let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The political, the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled and misguided are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store. And expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world, and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this, what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation. And it expanded and expanded until today it's where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community. What we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else trying to beg him for a job. Anytime you have to rely upon your enemy for a job, you're in bad shape. And he is your enemy. Anything, you wouldn't be in this country if some enemy hadn't kidnapped you and brought you here. On the other hand, some of you think you came here on the Mayflower. So as you can see, brothers and sisters, today, this afternoon, it's not our intention to discuss religion. We're going to forget religion. If we bring up religion, we'll be in an argument. And the best way to keep away from arguments and differences, as I said earlier, put your religion at home, in the closet. Keep it between you and your God. Because if it hasn't done anything more for you, than it has, you need to forget it anyway.
The moment that is bound to shape the future.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it. They telling me to get it. It said that the message I was bringing brought destruction. I put the pants in the bag and said, fuck them. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me from the jump. They'd rather see me slumped, face down, shot 5 or 6 times with my kid and a mama in the cop car, brown and outshine. Stop lying, it's a black and white thing. Redneck ass judges, rather watch a nigga hang than indict what's white, not right. Fuck a news feed. Black man got the same needs as the Jews need. Who me? I demand reparations. Fuck a cowboy. I'm a native, robbed of my nation. I'm an African black man. Fucked out my language, got me bringing to a white boy. God, that's insane. And if you ask me why they steadily harass me, I reply with that these motherfuckers nasty. And I'm a god, yet they calling me a nigga. They scared of me, so they try to hide behind the trigger, acting badass. Fuck a honky with the badge. I'm a nigga with an attitude. You can kiss my black ass. Ain't no sense in niggas being diplomatic. Televise the revolution. Let these motherfuckers have it. I'm calling up the homies. They said to come through. And I run with the niggas. They scared to come shoot. Take an eye for an eye. Take a tooth for tooth. Do unto others as them others would do all to you. And now they say it make America great. What America hates. Kept America straight. And America safe. Motherfuck that flag. My people are not free. We wanna touch that flag. So quick to try to copyright what came for free. Now they blaming me. And it's plain to see that they mad at that. Like I'm a magic act. Yeah, imagine that. Motherfucker, I'm black. Fucking vultures. Super quick to steal one culture. Trying to make it your own. Caveman, go home. Over 10 long nose, funny looking ass Donald. Got his nerve disrespecting President Obama. If you don't want us around, then let us leave. Pay the money you've been owing my people since they were set free. That 40 acres and a mule never came, but yet we're still outstanding. Outstanding in the rain, just waiting, pacing, pacing, and praying for God to step up. But nah, it ain't been taken. I was mistaken, thinking scripture could have helped us. Following the faith of our very own oppressors. No justice, just us. Look at how the aftermath of slavery today still affects us. Our kids educated by the enemy. And they don't know shit about their history. If they ain't teaching that in school, leave it up to them coons. And all that's cool. Let the bygones be bygones. And besides, we've been killing off our own. Shut the fuck up, you know what? Uncle Tom, house niggas, slaves, see they motherfucking nuts cut. I pack steel in the hour of the chaos. If black lives still don't matter till you stay out.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Self-defense of fitness.
Don't rush the show. You got to solve the problem.
straight out racist. The sucker was simple and plain.
Motherfucking men, John Wayne.
Cause I'm black and I'm proud.
Already.
I'm ready, I'm hyped cause I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in no stamp. Sample looks at you looking for nothing but rednecks for 400 years if you text.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one jam. Damn if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on.
Come on.
What we got to say.
Yeah.
Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the power that be.
Fight the power.
Such as the prisoners at Attica, the guards at Attica. as a Vietnamese people and black people in this country, as well as poor white people.
The party is...
While the whole world revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance. When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes, when the revolution comes. I hope pearly white teeth fall off the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end, and nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution
comes. When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall off the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jew merchants will give away matzo balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Stiffen will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
afros gonna be trying to straighten their heads, and straighten heads gonna be trying to wear afros. When the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes.
But until then, you know, and I know, niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party. Some might even die before the revolution comes.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Matt Turner, co-host myself, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our engineers on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, the silent assassin, you dig? Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, the land grab, neo-colonial ethnic cleansing. We're going to open up our lines to our host, People's Political Party, National Chair, Black Power, comrade. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Black Power, Black Power. All powerful people. Right on. This topic, you know, that has come to be so prevalent, you know, amongst black people, you know, such a term, you know, that is usually known by, you know, the word gentrification. You know, to some of us, you know, it's quite a many-letter word, you know. It's as foreign as it can be to maybe the average person or the layman or the laywoman, you know, the lay brother or the lay sister, you know, the novice, you know, has become popular, you know, among black people. And popularity shows the detriment, you know, the negativity of it, you know, the harmful effects of it. And we've added history, you know, just like relating to expressions and terms, like through our relationship, you know, with the state. And again, you know, what do we mean by the state? You know, pretty much the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, you know, who serve in an orchestrated manner to keep the position of the white ruling class intact, and their flunkies, black, brown, red, and yellow, who willingly go along in exchange for their own selfish motives or you know, agenda or ambitions, as a small group, which could be, you know, put into a class more times than not, the so-called middle class, which serves as a buffer for the state against the rest of us collectively, the collective masses of black people, black and brown people in general, and the so-called poor whites who have their class differences or antagonistic relationship, you know, with the white ruling class. So, to my understanding, you know, the term gentrification derived or was first coined in the 1960s in England, in the country of England, Great Britain, Western Europe, on the East Atlantic Ocean. And that was in reference to the middle class, the middle class invasion of the working class communities. It doesn't register at first when you're saying these two labels, the fact that the middle class is a working class too. And so just the distinction alone, middle class and working class, is a problem. You know, and we have to identify that that problem. You know, Europeans have had a history of labeling people, of categorizing people to their advantage, to their victims' demise, in particularly black and brown people, indigenous people, you know, of this planet, of this world, which make up, you know, the majority population of this planet, along with the so-called red and the yellow, the non-whites, in other words, are the majority people of this planet. You know, and so this invading of the worker class communities in England, on the part of, you know, the white ruling class there, and this is pretty much a class struggle, you know, between, in general, two groups of white people, yet using another group of whites who, on this pyramid-like structure, you know, this tier-like structure, like top-down. Therefore, there's a class struggle between the whites, you know, as articulated by those who consider themselves as Marxists. We've mentioned this term, you know, several occasions. And it's necessary to give some understanding of what we're talking about here, some clarity, you know, so our people can understand these different isms. And we can, you know, do even though we've been miseducated, terribly deprived of the right type of education and knowledge in order for us to be able to articulate, you know, so easily. But we feel the brunt of the blow of these isms, especially racism, you know, along with classism. And, of course, for black women, black and brown women, sexism. You know, so the Marxist, you know, places in the proper context as far as the system, you know, in which they had been living, and that system is capitalism, which is, you know, right with contradictions. And therefore, it's inevitable demise. And this is where we're at now. So just try to, you know, give a root, like, type of understanding here. And so crossing the ocean, to what we know as America. But let me say this right quick. There are black people in Britain. And, you know, due to the transatlantic slave trade in recent times, and I say recent times because in recent times we can say 500 years as opposed to 5,000 years, you know, 50,000 years, or 10,000 years, or 15,000 years, or 20, you know, in fives, more ancient times, where that part of the world then was originally populated by black people. Yes, what we know today as Britain was originally populated by black people. And so that's why we see in recent times, due to the transatlantic slave trade and the human trafficking by force of violence to that part of the world, which left a residue population that is still present in that part of the world. And so this working class community obviously included, you know, a minority black population there, which means the brunt of the blow was doubly as vicious as opposed to the poorer whites, if the case may be, you know, being supplanted by the middle class through the power brokers. The word gentrification itself as an expression basically has the same root or understanding or relationship to the word gentleman. The gents, which, you know, is basically male-oriented. The white gents who were the elites, the white power brokers, in some cases, the white royals, who, as a matter of fact, are in mourning as we speak, over their queen and their accumulation of wealth historically, having come from the dope trade in the so-called East, in the Oriental East, particularly regions of Central Asia, the country, India, and so how they accumulated mass wealth. And these were the gents who established themselves as the gentry, who owned the land, who controlled the land. And they themselves had become labeled as the landed gentry. And so, just for clarity, you know, they referred to as the gentry as opposed to what has been labeled the serfs, the majority population, the poorer population, who in this so-called monarchy are seen as the subjects of the queen. And this is still a concept that's, you know, relevant or taken serious today, you know. And so crossing the ocean, the implementation of the, you know, the slave trade and, you know, physical freedom, Reconstruction, you know, Jim Crow, you know, to the 50s and 60s, and on, you know, to the 70s, the 80s, and what have you, and to this day and time. And this segregation period, you know, that had taken place in America, you know, what we knew is the Jim Crow era, you know. So so with the segregation era, you know, you had, you know, black people, you know, the disenfranchising of black people, and so therefore they'll fight for, you know, civil rights and what have you, you know, giving these civil rights bills and whatnot. The control mechanism of black people on the part of the white power structure and its various tentacles of control, from the Ku Klux Klan to the police force, keeping law and order on behalf of the rich whites, the steerers of the machine. And so this is a concept that becomes more vicious when it comes to non-whites. There's an array of explanations and an array of things, you know, that one can, you know, can look to explain, you know, why segregation necessary, you know, what was the, you know, the reason why, you know, white people wanted to stay segregated from black people, you know. For one, you know, this so-called miscegenation thing, this threat of miscegenation, you know, this threat of blood mixing, you know, fear of white genetic annihilation, you know, on the part of the stronger gene, which is possessed by black and brown people, you know, indigenous people. Something I remember Stokely Carmichael mentioning the minute that these so-called laws or bills or acts were put in place to give black people the same access to a toilet, you know, same access to a hospital, same access to the front of the bus, you know. After all, they had been getting taxed, but didn't have any representation. But Stokely Carmichael, formerly known then, who went to the realm of the Ogun when his eyes closed for the last time, a final time, known as Kwame Ture. But he had said that these so-called civil rights acts or laws or what have you were put in place to tell white people, you know, to not, you know, interfere with the black man anymore, particularly to keep white women away from black men. Now, he didn't say to keep black men away from white women. He said to keep white women away from black men, you know. And so, you know, there are those who take that as the chief reason why segregation was kept intact for so long, you know. The disruption of the white gene flow, amongst other things, this interaction between the whites and the blacks, you know. And so the driving factors of segregation motivated by what is referred to as social Darwinism, you know, this concept of the survival of the fittest. You know, and so this has been something that the white ruling class never really relinquished, or a significant section of the sector of the so-called white race. You know, not only the, you know, the segregate black people, but to keep them economically depraved. And so, of course, you know, it wouldn't be about any particular race, you know, if, you know, if you segregate a group of people and keep them economically depraved, they naturally turn to vice. You know, and vice naturally leads to crime. And, of course, crime naturally leads to physical harm, and physical harm naturally leads to debt, and debt naturally leads to prison. And prison naturally leads to profit. And profit naturally leads to enormous wealth in the private industry. You know, and so to sort of, how should I put it, like a, like in the movie, you know, these Star Wars movies, where you know, the original Star Wars movies, you know, were first made in the 70s. You know, they had, you know, the Star Wars, the first movie, and then they had the second movie, Empire Strikes Back. You know, like, you know, like a return, like, you know, and then, you know, the white coats suffered defeat, and then the, you know, the black coats, the white coats return, you know, and wreak havoc on the empire. And this third movie is called Return of the Jedi. And you can take that type of understanding to understand, or that type of picture to understand the return of segregation, constitution or resuscitation of segregation, in other words, you know,
And it's not readily perceivable to some of us. You know what I'm saying? It's not readily perceivable, you know, to some of us. And so to find ways to constantly, you know, resegregate black people, to constantly corral black people again and again and again in some type of sophisticated way, some type of strategy, tactic to revive it or to maintain it for the same reasons. You know, the safeguarding of the white minority, you know, on the planet, you know, or the potential, the preventing of the potential overthrow of the state by the group that comes off as most threatening. And then, of course, you know, and specifically would be black people, you know. And so gentrification has become the present, the latest strategy to continually segregate black people or to to keep corralling black people, you know, in a prescribed place. You know, we can go back and look at the you know, the so-called Native Americans, you know, and what happened to the so-called Native American. And I, you know, I say that you know, for a purpose, you know, but you can make a parallel there. You can make a parallel there, but to find another sophisticated form of resegregating black people, recolonizing black people, the colonial mind, you know. And so the invasion of black people who concentrated in certain areas, certain regions across the country, and it would behoove you, you know, to try to understand how is that, you know, these whites could have all these other regions around the country, you know, these huge ass areas where there's hardly any black people, and there's no habitats there, you know, that, you know, these whites have to migrate, you know, to other parts of the fucking country, and move into a community, you know, that they wouldn't have anything to do in the first fucking place, you know, if there was no vested interest in the shit, you know what I'm saying? And so, really like sinister like kind of thing, you know, this cloaked kind of thing, you know, somebody had to have been sitting in these boardroom meetings, you know, trying to figure this shit out, you know, the landed gentry, the real estate moguls, you know, the stakeholders in this whole shit. And so these little Vietnams that have been a constant for decades coming out of the 60s, you know, certain cities have been put on the map, you know, due to the decadence, you know, the so-called ghetto. You know, people know Watts around the world. You know, Watts. People know that shit around the world. You know, people know Detroit. You know, around the world, Memphis. You know, South Central, you know. Shit, New Orleans. You know, Atlanta. You know. People know these cities around the world, what they're known for. You know, they're projected onto the world as America's crime problem. You know, America's problem is crime. In the face of crime is the ghetto. You know, black people. You know, black males. And so that's why, you know, this type of indoctrination, social engineering, you have people coming from other countries or they come visit here. And this is in their subconscious, you know, do not go near the hood. You know, whatever you do, don't go left. Stay to the right. You know, and this is the type of degradation, media, propaganda. And so these same regions, how could they be so bad that whites want to move into them now? You know, and so the trick is, Verizon is the trick. You know, and this is all legal. You know, and of course, that word legal, as I've said in previous shows, is very flexible when it you know, when it's necessary, off and on like a light switch. So, to wield the impression of revitalization, to revamp, you know, poor communities, you know, urban communities, you know, it is bringing back, you know, urban communities. And we'd have to be out of our damn minds to think that the state and it's the real estate sector of the state, you know, will make this happen without that being some type of vested interest. No. And so this is the new segregation on the slip. You know, like black people say sometimes, you know, and you do some things on the slick, but mask them as something else. You know, mask them as something else. The true intention is to bring back what you've already done to that person. You know, and this is done, you know, to women. You know. So to revitalize, you know, the community, you know, is to resegregate black people, push them out onto the periphery, and this mass influx of whites who will be labeled as the middle class sector, you know, of America. Excuse me, those who are, you know, willing to go along, you know, to serve the state, to keep the state, the white ruling class in its lofty position in exchange for, you know, material luxury, material comfort, you know, and so, this invasion and what comes with it. You know, our people, you know, black people, you know, for the most part, we're renters. You know. And so to make this community, this area, go from low value to high value, which in essence push us out, renters, you know, who more times than not have been black and brown people. You know, it's coming back, so to speak, into areas that the whites abandoned due to desegregation. And this shows you right there the dysfunctional mentality of the white collective in its confused state, in its anxiety state, in its state of madness, driven by some type of psychosis rooted in social Darwinism, being told the survival of the fittest than by any means necessary tactics or strategies to destroy, to prevent, to even kill in order to exist, you know, to survive, you know, in a sea of blackness. You know. And so the so-called private sector interests in these neighborhoods that have been let go on purpose, that have been neglected economic-wise on purpose in order to create the condition that's necessary the lowest of the low. Is no different than, let's say, you know, like on Wall Street, you know, buy a little, sell high, you know. The same strategy tactics used by the so-called private sector. And so this strategic plan, you know, to revitalize, you know, poor neighborhood under-resourced, neighborhood, and there's all kind of shit. You have the sociologists telling us that the conditions ain't necessary. It's not black people. It's the things that drive the conditions, or it's the things that create the conditions that drive black people into things that they would normally do on one end, and this preying on black people, black communities through redevelopment, you know. And so this raising up the stakes for the stakeholder, which makes it only viable for a certain segment of society to be able to afford. And so what happens to those who have been trying to find these terminology, you know, the bombardment, you know, that's been heaped upon, you know, black and brown people that lived in these neighborhoods that at one point there was no interest in. The only other interest was the prison industrial complex. You know, the funeral home, and so forth, from that perspective. You know, and so they're pushed out. You know, and so being pushed out, in essence, is being forced out. You know, particularly renters. For the most part, those of us who own property, the other ways of doing that is to do what? Is to use the so-called property value strategy. You know, in New Orleans, I've seen with my own eyes, up close and personal, the confiscation of properties, single-story properties, single-story shotgun, you know, doubles, you know, that have been revamped into two-story properties and sold for, you know, $700,000-$800,000. And you see this odd-looking two-story property sitting in the middle of the block or toward the end of the block, and the rest of the houses are shotgun doubles, single story. And this is a strategy to force property owners by raising up their taxes, you know, strategically through this synthetic notion of property value, targeting those who refuse, you know, to move, those who refuse to sell their properties for cheap. You know, it's vicious. It's a vicious cycle. In essence, that is war against black and brown people. So just as politics is a war without violence against black and brown people. And this has been demonstrated clearly in historically in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, specifically what the Europeans and the imperialists have carved out as the so-called Middle East. No. And so to raise up the taxes and to make that become antagonistic with one's wages, you know, one's earnings for the year until there's a buildup, you know, after so long, and this would make, you know, the victims appear to be incompetent. It will make them appear to be, you know, terribly misguided in terms of their priorities. You know, and of course, you know, propaganda is a very powerful tool on the part of the state. And so this is how some homeowners, property owners, were forced out. You know, totally legal. Now, you know, we can enter into this and a moral thing, an ethical thing, what have you. But I've learned in my lifetime in this country, there's no such thing as morals or ethics on the part of those who steer the machine. You know, there is no moral. The only morals is on paper or some great document, you know, the Bible, so to speak. But they make no moral decisions on any of that because they're driven materialists. And so they make material decisions. And in their mind, there's no such thing as right or wrong. It's a material decision driven by free enterprise, free trade, the non-restraints of free trade or free enterprise. Capitalism at its finest, you know, the capitalist mode of operation, and to wield the impression that in this country, you know, everyone has the equal opportunity to achieve, which is bullshit. You know, it's not possible for everyone to achieve, because if everyone would achieve, then there could be no rich people if there weren't any exploited people or any poor people. You know, it wouldn't be possible. So there have to be poor people in order for there to be rich people be at an advantage and others be at a disadvantage. And so you throw in race, then you talking about poor black people who are the constant victims of constant war in various forms. And the one we're talking about tonight is the land grab. Neatly packaged towards his gentrification, because it's much more acceptable that way. And so to be pushed out is basically, in essence, to be forced out. And to be forced out from one region to the next region. To be forced out from one area to the next area. Now, there's a, and it gets even more sinister. It gets even more sinister there. So there's a parallel here. As I mentioned, what we've been told is Native Americans. And so to be forced out into the periphery. And that, in essence, is migration. And so the migrations that have been created using the same land grab ideology, and move the settler colonies in, the settlers. And so the Native Americans can tell us better than anybody else who understand that tactic, that relationship with the white, the so-called whites, the Europeans, the invaders, the famous Trail of Tears, where they had to migrate from one region on to a region that was set up for them, a reservation in the snow. And Europeans have been displacing people all around the world for the past 500 years. And it's an ongoing process. It is just a much more sophisticated process today. And at a local level, in the cities of America, where the heavy concentrations of black people in these cities, that again, had no vested interest on the part of the whites when, niggas was out there hustling. Sisters was out there hustling too in the deep of the night. And the crime and the drugs and the violence and the debt. So there was no vested interest in until this so-called redevelopment private sector and niggas thinking that shit was for free. And it wasn't. There was no intentions on the white ruling class private sector to redevelop shit and leave us there with an infrastructure that they paid for. You'd have to be out of your minds to believe that. So that leaves us with no other course of action but to push back. And the more we push back and the more they keep driving, the more we keep pushing back and the more they keep driving due to their insatiable lust for rule and power and control, And the more that takes place, the more it drives those to the brink of revolutionary warfare. And this is a historical phenomenon. And the more they keep driving, and so naturally, at some point, the victims will naturally take on a revolutionary posture. This is no guesswork or some in rhetoric. History clearly teaches us that. And so, with the, the black and brown indigenous people here, the so-called Indian, two other on the international scale, or three really, but outside of Africa, you know, you could look at what has historically happened to India and Australia, the indigenous black and brown people of India and Australia. You know, what happened to them. You know, the same tactic, strategy, of land grab, which created a situation to where they had become displaced. And now along with that being displaced are a whole other things that we really don't would recognize, you know. These things, you know, result in physical endangerment and mental health issues. There are dozens of research, you know, papers, you know, that we can say, you know, documents to make these connections between poor health, gun violence, and so-called gentrification. Of course, naturally, you have to include the police presence or the police. You have to include them into the equation. No. And so to be pushed on the periphery. And then the same forces, the developers, you know, who commit the land grab violations against the human rights to the land. These same forces would turn around and build what they call affordable housing on the periphery. Now, this grabbing of the city, there's so many facets to it. And I'm try my best to cover them all, you know. But the physical endangerment and mental health, black women historically developing cancer, mortality rates, you know, higher than white women. You know, these connections that have been made due to what they refer to as gentrification. Despair, self-esteem, you know, low self-esteem, which leads to drug abuse. In more cases with black women, black and brown women, and a combination of drug abuse and alcoholism with black males, you know, to be left on the periphery and have to go, quote unquote, into town to get the basic necessities of life, you know, food, you know, clothing, and, you know, various consumptions of, you know, beverages, you know. There's a whole orchestrated thing. There's a whole orchestrated effect. And with the youth, if you attack the uptown part of the city, land grab that, and attack the lower part of the city, land grab that, and then build these affordable housing units on the periphery. And so therefore they are forced out and they're forced into these areas which in essence become crowded spaces. In these crowded spaces, you have an amalgam of different personality types. And of course, in America, breeds the individualist, the factional, this factionalism. And so you have factionalism. Factionalism leads to tribalism. And so we know, you know, across the country, in the hood, you know, we familiar with the Bloods, the Crips. That we familiar with uptown and downtown, you know, the south side, you know, the west side, you know, and so in cities like Chicago, you know, Los Angeles, New Orleans, you know, you have these ward mentalities. So if you attack the ninth ward and if you attack the third ward, the 12th ward, and then all of these wards come under the same you know, white ruling class strategy of gentrification, and you know, you push them out and force them out into an environment that become a crowded space. What do you have? And see, we have to understand that they know this. They're conscious of the results. They anticipate the results. They anticipate the potential powder keg that they create. So this is what is correctly referred to as synthetic violence. This is not natural violence. This is synthetic violence, but naturally, knowing what they're doing, you know, consciously, subconsciously, you know. Yeah, if it's 10 in a room, one of them may be unconsciously aware, but he sees the results in the news, you know the local 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock news, you know, the newspaper, electronic news, you know. And so these people are very methodical. The state is very vicious. It's vicious, can carry out attacks against black and brown people around the world, you know, murder them through the legitimacy of war, you know, legitimating war, and then create another strategy to where they can murder you or your clan indirectly. And this is indirect murder on the part of the state. It is a sophisticated thing. It's not readily recognizable to some of us, if not most of us, you know, but all of us ain't dumb, deaf, and blind, you know. Some of us can see. And this is what one's those of us who do, it becomes our responsibility to pass this on to those of us who don't readily see it. And so this is a product, a byproduct of what they refer to as gentrification, you know, creating synthetic crime, you know, by hurting as we see on the streets, you know, hurting niggas from downtown, niggas from uptown in the same so-called affordable housing area, a prescribed area. And this prescribed area is the same as what they refer to as the reservation, you know, with the so-called Native Americans, you know, the reservations that they had in Australia. With the Aborigines, you know, the black people, you know, of Australia, the first original indigenous people that populated that region we know as Australia, but looking at it on a map that sits in the Pacific Ocean, you know, way south of the of the Asian continent, you know, more eastward, you know, southeast of the Asian landmass. And so the reservations that they had set up once they went in and land grabbed this part of the land, and, you know, operations and the health effects, the psychological issues that develop with that sector of the indigenous black and brown people in that part of the world. And in India, the same strategy that the British used. The British had set up the East India Company and went in and did the land grab. And what did they do? They displaced the indigenous people, and therefore not only displaced them, but attacked their culture, and therefore attacking their culture, attacking their you know, their way of life, you know. And so the physical detriment and the psychological issues that they developed there. And these parallels are like, it's like a woman who's had, what is it? Okay, it's the triplets, and the other is quadruplets. Okay, now, you know, we can make the quadruplet be Southern Africa. You know, this fictional region that they carved out and call it the country of South Africa, the government of South Africa. But before they did that, they actually had a scuffle over this region. Two groups of whites, the Dutch, you know, otherwise known as the Boer, and the British, the English-speaking population. And they had a beef over Southern Africa. The British won out. And that's as far as that went. But when it came to the niggers, the Dutch and the British combined their forces together. They unified. And that is the evolution of what became popular under Nelson Mandela as the apartheid system. It's the same strategy. The land grab, the displacement, and the physical detriment and the psychological, the mental issues, the poor health. This is why you can gather this information yourself. You know, you don't need an expert. You know, you don't need some sociologist from the university. You can literally go and grab the statistics yourself. You can grab the statistics in Southern Africa, in the American South, just to use that as an example. You know, India and Australia, and compare them. You compare them. They're like quadruplets. A woman has given birth to four sons, and you couldn't tell them apart unless one has some kind of distinguishing thing or whatever, some kind of way. You know, some twins, you know, they come into the world, and some cases where one gets, you know, bigger than the other one. That's how you can tell, you know, Keon from Dion. You know, Keon is bigger than Dion. Oh, that's right, that's Keon, because he's bigger than Dion. And that is it. Other than that, they twins. And this is the land grab. This is in the local environment that we speak in here in the cities of New York, D.C. D.C. at one point had what we were told the so-called richest black, you know, enclave in America, in Washington, D.C. at one point. You know, so you see this history areas like in Harlem, you know, the land grab. You know, and so you create these conditions that lead to our destruction. And the media can put a spin on it and call it black-on-black crime. You know, all for the benefit of the white ruling class, the white middle class, and of course in there the middle class. You know, there's these sprinklings of non-whites. You know, these sprinklings of non-whites. You know, black, brown, you know, red, yellow, what have you. More times than not, it would be, you know, maybe black, you know, East Asian, so to speak. Even when we say black and brown, we can include, you know, the East Indians, meaning, you know, the black, the brown skin, dark brown skin, you know, light brown skin, you know, non-whites that come from the country of India, you know, here and make a living, you know, become a doctor or what have you, or whatever, so, you know, some scientists or physicists, and he can live, you know, in these, move into these areas that have been land grabbed. He, you know, bought him a house of 700,000, you know, and see nothing, you know, put a muzzle on his face and just live, pretends to see nothing. He only pretends to see nothing until a threat comes along and threatens his political ambitions, you know, as a Democrat. And so some Republican comes along and threatens his political, you know, his, you know, what he believes in, you know, as a Democrat. And so who does he need? He needs the same people that have been displaced by the private sector, which allowed him to move into this area. Now he needs those same people who have been forced out to migrate. And let's get this straight. Everybody who was forced out weren't hustling on the streets. You know, these were, quote unquote, people who belong to the working class. You know, and so these same individuals who have benefited from the land grab would need these people who have been forced out to go to the voting polls for them so they can keep their political ambitions intact. And so that's similar to as saying taxation without any representation. See, they're being taxed for that, but they don't have any representation which fights for them to keep them intact into neighborhoods that they've been in third and fourth generation. And this is the crucial part about it. And so when we talk about you know, the violent part of it, you know, this is clandestine violence. This is clandestine violence. You know, clandestine violence. It can be compared to the racial violence that took place with Trayvon Martin, you know, which cost him his life, you know, entering a neighborhood, so to speak, you know, that weren't typically, you know, where niggas, you know, lived. You know. And you can make the a comparison in terms of factionalism, but racial factionalism here. So if you move them into the same area, what do you think you're going to get? Now, the other thing that comes to mind, you know, that you can include in this, that's part of it, how shall I say it? This population reduction, population control, you know, black debt is worth a lot of money. It's a valuable asset in one's stock portfolio, meaning the private prison industry, such as Wagon Hut and Correction Corporations of America. which is nothing correct about it at all. It's just that they have a correct position on their ambitions, on their ideology as a prison system. And so this violence, indirect murder of black and brown people through the land grab and its mechanisms that disguise the fact, you know, that is totally legal, and that this is what makes democracy so great, that one can become an entrepreneur, that one can invest in property, you know, this thing that, you know, that they have in these syndicated shows on television referred to as flipping the house, you know. I mean, and it just, you know, a really vicious stuff is so cool, you know, dressed up is so cool. And see no qualms about it at all, period. And that is, this is the type of things that is going to heighten black people's consciousness, you know, to heighten the contradictions, like, you know, Chairman Fred would say, you know. And these are the things that will prepare us on the road to the revolutionary transformation of society, you know, at the cost of a struggle, a constant struggle, you know. And so, you know, this black on black violence as a prison industrial complex. On one end, the warehousing of its victims, and particularly, you know, black and brown males. But this the debt part is a contributing factor to what is referred to as Malthusian philosophy. You know, I've mentioned that before. Named after some white man named Thomas Malthus, who was lived 200 years ago, and his economist buddy referred to as Adam Smith, and how they have been seen as the bedrock of the capitalist idea, the capitalist mode of production, and the expansionist era, where Adam Smith had pointed out that the two greatest discoveries of the Europeans was India and the Americas. You know, and this expansionist era, which led to the Industrial Revolution. And, of course, we cannot speak about this Industrial Revolution without speaking about slavery, forced enslavement of black and brown people in India and in the Americas. And so becoming a surplus value after a certain point in time, and so left in prescribed areas with no infrastructure, which would naturally cause them to turn inward on each other. There's been some cases where, or at least even in the portrayal in the movie, where, you know, a group of people ended up in the snow, in the mountains, or something went terribly wrong, or you know, their plane crashed, but everybody didn't die, and they survived, or what have you, or one person may not have made it. You know, and so they get to the point of desperateness, and so that dead body becomes a consumption in order to live until, you know, they've finally been rescued. There's been several of those cases. And so that is what it will become when one begins to grow desperate. And then to pull the roots of democracy or equality and equity and all this kind of synthetic bullshit, you know, to redevelop. New Orleans is I wanted to say a unique case, but there's nothing unique about it. It's just that it's been the latest city that has come under attack, you know, by the land grab. Now, to say all of this, you speak. Oh, and I want to add this something else. I forgot to mention, like when we talk about, you know, the Fifth Ward or whatever, like in Houston, you know, Harlem, the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, which has been made famous due to Hurricane America. You know, the on purpose. Lack of government response to its own citizens or to those who have been projecting onto the rest of the world on one end as United States citizens of America. And in Southern Africa, the Bantu speaking people, the land grab there, and the forced forced implementation of living on the periphery. Area became known as the Bantustan. You know, the Bantustans. And so the periphery of Harlem, Washington, D.C., Detroit, New Orleans, Houston, Philadelphia, are modern-day Bantustans in America as a result of the land grab and the displacement of those who had been there. Essence, what are we saying here? How can we sum up, this whole thing? You know, is no more nor less than a display in power. No more nor less than a display in power. The white ruling class power being manifesting itself rather through what they call gentrification. You know, all the so-called successes and hard-won battles, part of the civil rights ideologists who have been just as negligent as the white power structure. And so the land grab can be seen as an example or a display or manifestation of white deed. Private land brokers, they don't have to say white power. They're not going to be foolish enough to get caught out in the open, out in public, screaming and yelling white power and doing the Heil Hitler. They leave that for their overt racist types known as the neo-Nazis or Aryan Brotherhood or whatever you want to call them. You know, they leave that pawns in the game. You know, they don't have to display white power physically out in the open. They display white power in the most sophisticated of ways, and the land grab is one of them. And so we'd be very negligent ourselves. Those who understand the shit, those who, of us who can see it, to not say black power as a legitimate response, you know, to this form of white power. No, and what would that entail on our part? A staunch, unapologetic position. And those who come in our midst and try to get us to turn away from it, you know, towards some alternative, you know, dressed up as progress, you know, is no different than the white liberals who have entered our midst for the longest. Yeah. So our response is black power. And the galvanizing of the collective masses of our people who have been footing the bill for a handful of Negro intellectuals so they can stay safe and comfortable in their neat enclaves, you know, that they have carved out for themselves, the black versions of Martha's Vineyard. You know, the Hamptons or what have you, in New Orleans, Eastover, you know, these enclaves that have been carved out, you know, for the handful of us who have been allowed access to material comfort in exchange for their obedience, you know, appeasing the white power structure on one end, and looking to us on the other end for their support because they own something, you know. So this relationship has to be demolished if there's no reciprocity. You know, I've heard wealthy, famous black people talk about how much they love their people. They love the hood and these rags to riches stories, you know, that ESPN will present as 30-30, you know, and show how so-and-so this and so-and-so that emerged from Compton had nothing, you know. Brother had to share the same pants, or the sister had to share the same pants. These rags are riches stories, you know. The father's in prison, you know. Mother's a single mother, you know. Had to work two jobs, in some cases three jobs, you know, and got help from the grandmother, the aunt, and the big sister. You know, these rags are riches stories. And the same neighborhood from which they came is under attack now. And they ain't doing the damn thing. But yet, with love for those brothers who hustle, you know, who got a roll in their pocket, to go down to the sporting goods store and buy their jersey with their name on the back of it. But don't do shit in return. And so we have to destroy that relationship. I don't give a shit if the nigga collection like a Hershey chocolate bar and the white as a teeth. Only thing that you could see in the dark is when he smiled is his teeth. I could care less. And again, the same people who have come under attack. It's the same people that the state, the corporation, the company, the Fortune 500 club, or pay one of them $1 million to look into that camera and say the lines that's on the teleprompter right above the lens. And what does the line say? You know, vote or die. You know, it's very important that you vote. Quote Dr. King, you know, guilt trip the youth about people died for your right to vote. And I tell them name five. You know, and this type of treachery. And so, you know, we draw the line in the dirt. We have to. Because we're under constant attack. You know? We stay under attack. And this land grab shit is very vicious. It is a cold-hearted, heartless form of war that's carried out against black and brown people. Amounting to thousands of casualties. And these casualties end up, a portion of them, going to the graveyard, you know, pushing up daisies. Which is one of the, you know, the slangs, you know, that, you know, we used to use in the 80s and the 90s, you know, some of the, you know, the so-called rappers, you know, pushing up daisies, what have you, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, again, you know, they don't have to yell, you know, white power. They can display it, you know. And so it leaves us no other alternative but, you know, to not bring a knife to a gunfight, you know. And this is where we at with it, you know. So, hope I was able to, you know, cover pretty much what, you know, we set out to do. You know, something else too, right quick, these white apologists, you know, who come along and wanna, in some cases, support community programs, you know, the Band-Aid approach, you know, to a gaping wound, you know, sustainable living and what have you, you know, trying to come and pacify us, you know. Like I said before, you know, these whites who, some of the same whites who have benefited from the land grabs are some of the same whites who were out there with the Black Lives Matter t-shirts on. You know, during the the George Floyd phenomenon. I mean, you know, the George Floyd thing that was taking place. You know, instead of taking head on the whites who create these conditions, you know, raising up the up in the ante, you know, when those whites were promising all of these wonderful things to the poorer whites, you know, over the so-called Revolutionary War. You know, they didn't come through. What happened? You had Shay's Rebellion. You know, those whites weren't trying to, you know, wear no T-shirts and hold no signs. You know, shit. It was Shay's Rebellion. You know, straight up. So we're going to, you know, end on that note. And make it very clear. Make it very clear. You know, with no equivocations. Make it very fucking clear, straight up. You know what I'm saying? So on that note, I want to thank those who have been listening. Stay tuned for next week. You know, same black time, 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, In Defense of the People Radio. Brought to you by People's Political Party, National Chair, Brother Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, or Brother Motherland, and what I refer to as our assault technician, Sister Amina, our National Minister of Communication. You know what I'm saying? And on that note, we say black power and all power to the people and your whole rule.
This young lady right there.
Mr. Malcolm. Now, you're right, of course, the black people are in the worst. They have had the worst treatment. But isn't it also possible that if the white people, the poor people, the people down in my neighborhood, the white people, those that don't work, those that are on welfare, those that have nothing, if they got together too, and you help us, we'll help you. You help us get up there. You help us get rid of some of these people that are pressing down on us.
No, I say you should be just as active in your neighborhood as we're trying to, as you have been in our neighborhood.
Is
that possible? All right, we get our neighborhood to
feel hot.
Everybody's going for something. We alone, there are too few of us. There are too many men up there with all their cop cars and everything. That's what they're always telling you. Never let your enemy tell you how many of you there are. Never let the man that you're against form your opinion. This is the trick that's played on everyone who's oppressed. The first thing, an occupation, when you have a revolution in the country, the first thing you take over is the radio. And then you start telling the people that everybody, the war is over. And so all of them surrender. No, they believe that thing right there. And once they take that over, they start telling you where you are and where they are, and you fall right in line. It's plain thought control. The majority of the American people aren't segregationists. That the majority of the American people aren't imperialists. But the government is, the structure is, the power faction is. So, how then do all the majority go along with it? Because those who sit in power over the television, over the radio, and over the press is constantly telling those who are the masses how free they are. And how this they are and how that they are. So a mistake is made on your part when you think that white people suffer the same as black people. Or as many Jews will say, well, we're a minority too. Or the Irish will say, well, we used to be a minority. No one's a minority like we are. They didn't need civil rights legislation to solve any other minority problems. It didn't take a civil war to solve any other minority problem. It didn't take Supreme Court.